Welcome to this Support Technical Exchange session. The topic for today is WebSphere Commerce Solar Search, Troubleshooting Common Issues. Today's presenters are Brendan Bela and Dan Gino. Brendan and Dan are WebSphere Commerce Technical Support Specialists. Brendan has been with WebSphere Commerce Support since 2009. He is the subject matter expert for WebSphere Commerce Search and has supported this function since it was released in 2011. Dan has been with WebSphere Commerce Support since 2012. He has taken on leadership roles in several areas, including data load and WebSphere Commerce Search. At this time, I would like to turn the session over to Brendan.
Thank you, Valerie. Slide two, please. Okay, so here's the agenda for today. I did one of these WSDEs covering some common solar search issues last year. Last year's presentation covered more setting up solar search, running processes such as pre-process, build index, things like that. So it was more about getting your search environment in place. This one's going to cover more runtime issues. So a lot of our customers, now that they've set up solar search, they're running into issues actually running solar search. So today in the agenda, we're going to be covering a high CPU quick case study, common out-of-memory issues, and then we're going to look at some queries, query issues. So there's going to be some general troubleshooting tips and then some more specific scenarios. Slide three, please. Okay, so high CPU. Like I said, what we're going to do for this one is we're going to look at a specific case study, a quick case study, and give some tips basically on how to troubleshoot solar high CPU issues. Slide four. So for this particular issue, customer was seeing high CPU periodically on their solar slave servers, and the graph I have below there is what the customer was seeing as CPU-wise on their solar slave servers. So there was 20 minutes, basically, of 100% CPU, followed by 10 minutes of calm, very low CPU, and then 20 minutes of high CPU, repeated over and over again. Customers, they were fine on Feature Pack 4. They found that they got this once they moved over to Feature Pack 5. Also, their slave machines had multiple processors or cores, and they were only seeing it on one core. Slide 5. So for troubleshooting solar high CPU issues, it's pretty much the same as troubleshooting any kind of WAS high CPU issue. Any kind of application that sits on WAS, basically you can always get the WAS high CPU must gather, and one of the main things that it gets from it, that it gathers, is the line perf and Java cores. So I have a printout of the line perf there, and basically it prints out all of the threads and the various amount, so percentage that each thread takes up of the CPU's time. For this issue, it was really clear which thread was causing the problem. There's just one thread. It was at 97% or even 100% CPU. Every single printout statement, it was always the same thread with this high CPU. So what you do is you have to match up the line perf with the Java cores. So for the line perf, the process ID for this particular thread is 21057. And what you do is you take the hex value and match it up to the Java core. So slide six. So in hex, 21057 turns into 5214. And that's exactly what you look for in the Java cores. So you can see here in the screen, I have it actually prints out the native thread ID. That's the value that you're looking for. And then underneath that, it's going to print out the stack of what the thread's actually doing. So here we can see that it's this thread was busy on the index-based spell checker. And it was actually building the index-based spell checker. This is weird from what the customer described, because like I said, this was happening on solar slave servers. It's generally the master server that's responsible for building the index, and the slave servers, basically, they just receive the index once it's built. So that was very strange. Slide 7. We found what was happening was there was a change in Feature Pack 5 where we changed a parameter for spell check, a parameter called build on commit to true. So what was happening for customers before Feature Pack 5 was up to solar version 3.5, the spell check index is not propagated when you propagate indexes from master machine to slave machines. So if you're querying the slave machine and you're querying to get spell check information, you can get out-of-date data. So what we did was in feature pack 5, we set this build on commit to true. It's not going to be an issue for every single customer. It's an issue for this particular customer and other customers who have modified their indexes to add in what we call volatile data. So, for example, this customer, they had inventory data that they were updating all the time. You know, they were constantly keeping track of as orders progressed on their site. They were updating inventory data and then sending out delta updates to the master and then the slave servers. And it was these delta updates that was causing, you know, the replication to happen and then the spell check index build. And you can see here replication. You can see it was happening every 10 minutes. So that's matched up exactly with what we were seeing in the slide or in the graph. Slide 8. So the resolution for this, like I said, it really depends on what you've done with your index. If you have basically, you know, an out-of-the-box index that doesn't have this volatile data and you're not doing frequent updates, you know, if you're not building the index constantly, whether it be fuller or delta updates, you're probably not going to see this on your slave server. Most customers, or a lot of customers at least, they will have, you know, a nightly build. They will only build the index once at night and they'll propagate it over to the slave servers. If that's the case, you can probably keep that parameter set to true. However, if you have volatile data or if you have a store where you're updating your catalog a lot, we recommend setting build on commit to false, which is going to prevent the Solar slave server from building the spell check index. What you can do instead is you can set up a nightly manual build by basically sending this URL I have here to your various Solar slave servers, and that's going to build the spell check index. You need to make sure to send this command to each Solar slave server in the cluster because it's only going to cause, you know, the slave server that receives this command to build the spell check index. Slide 8. So that's it for high CPU. Basically, troubleshooting the high CPU's issues are exactly the same as you would troubleshoot, you know, like a commerce high CPU issue. It's all about just following the WASM gather to get the line perf Java cores, finding the thread that's causing the high CPU and proceeding from there. So now we're going to look at out of memory. What I have for out of memory is there's not enough time for a case study, so we're going to look at just a couple of generic scenarios or common issues that we find that cause customers to get out of memory. So slide 10. So I have here four different scenarios that I've seen cause out of memory. The first two, they kind of go hand in hand. Sometimes they're related, where a customer, they have they've customized their index, maybe adding a large field, so a field with a lot of data, a lot of text that has to be searched through and also returned. And then there's this large row sizing. So if a customer has a large field and you're searching that field and you're returning that field to Solar, you could potentially be returning a lot of documents, each with, you know, a significant amount of text, back to Commerce. When Commerce receives this data, it as it works through, you know, what exactly it's going to display on the storefront, it's going to store this in memory. And if you have large enough indexes or large enough fields in your indexes and enough fields in hand with this large row size, it can cause an out of memory. So now let's talk about the row size. Another way of calling row size, rows is the Solar term. Page size is the URL term when you're setting up on your storefront. So basically this controls how many products you're going to display per page. And we find that these two together, if you're returning a lot of data from Solar and you have a large enough row size, that can cause out of memory. So I have a screenshot here. If you do get out of memory, the standard procedure is to take a heap dump. And if you have a heap dump and you take a look at the heap dump, if the out of memory is coming from data retrieved from Solar, you're going to see something like this. So this is a heap from a Commerce server, but you can see that there's Solar documents, org.apache.solar.com and .solar documents returned. That's because that's what we're getting back from Solar. And you can see there's a lot of them, 1,481, but and it's taking up almost 600 megabytes. So that's actually quite a bit for even 1,400. So if I remember correctly, this particular issue, it was the customer had some custom indexes or some custom fields that had a lot of data, and hand-in-hand with that, they were also retrieving, like I think, something like 500 CAD entries per page. So those are a couple of issues that can cause out-of-memory commerce size. This next one, too many facets, that's actually out-of-memory that you can see solar size. What we do for faceting up to feature pack 4 is we basically do an all-or-nothing approach when we construct facet queries and send them over to Solr. So if you're doing a query and that query involves faceting, we take every single facet, every single attribute that you marked as facetable, and we add them into the query. If you have a very large catalog with a lot of attributes and a lot of facets, facetable attributes, this query can get very large. And when you send it over to Solr has to do a lot of processing in order to figure out these counts. And keeping that in memory sometimes, we've seen it cause out of memory. The last one I have here, too many attribute values, that is an out of memory caused or seen on the commerce server. And this one's caused by when we switched over, we used to have this classic attribute model. We've since switched over to attribute dictionary attributes. And the idea behind attribute dictionary attributes was to reduce the amount of space, the amount of table size in the database for attributes by making attributes shared across products. Which is good. It reduces database size. We see that. But we also see larger data being retrieved as a result of that. So, for example, a lot of our customers, what we'll see is a couple of attributes that are shared across all products in a very large catalog, and that's going to result in a lot of attribute values for a single attribute. So, for example, if you have a clothing store, a lot of our customers, we will see two very large common attributes shared across all of their products, color and size. And we end up seeing sometimes like a color attribute that has like 16,000 different attribute values. So that's quite a lot. Slide 11. Okay, so solutions. For the first two that I mentioned, if you have a large field in your Solr index, you need to evaluate and you need to figure out if you actually have to return that field to the commerce server. A lot of times, what our customers do when they have this large field, they just have it for searching and for finding product matches. And there's actually no need to return that data to the commerce server. So you can actually, you don't have to return that data. And you can use the FL parameter in Solr or in our wc-search.xml, the FL parameter maps to this results section. So in your search profile, basically, in the results section, you can tell the search, which fields in the index to return. And if you have large fields, you need to ask yourself, is this data that I actually want to be returning to the commerce server? And if not, don't put it in the results section. If you don't have anything in the results section, it's going to return everything, every field from the Solr server. So it's definitely worth, for any custom search profiles that you have, it's definitely worth looking at that results section and reviewing what data you actually need retrieved from Solr to populate your response on the product page or on whatever page you're displaying on the storefront. So for the large row size, that's simple. Pretty much you need to use pagination. You can't have your row size too large or it's just going to be loading too much data in memory per request to Solr per page display. So we have this before Solr and we have it still, and it's just you need to do some tuning and you need to figure out how many products you want to display per page. We've also seen some customers implement a custom solution for infinite scrolling. We don't have that yet, but that's a pretty clever solution where basically you just scroll down to the bottom and then it will, through an AJAX request or something like that, get the next page worth of data. It'll get like the next 20 or 50, you know, products, and then the customer can just continue viewing. Slide 12. Okay. So the other two out of memories that we saw for too many facets, this one is we've changed the behavior in Feature Pack 5 we added category level faceting. So basically now if you're viewing a category, you can specify which facet you want to send over to Solr. And that's going to greatly reduce the queries that we send over to Solr, and it's going to simplify the query, and it's going to reduce the amount of memory, you know, Solr needs in order to process a query. What you can also do is you can increase the heap size on the Solr server. Our heap size on Solr is set to, by default, I think like 1.2 gigabytes, something like that. You can increase that if you have a 64-bit machine, that is. So we've seen some customers go up to like 2 or 3 gigabytes even. For that, it's all about, you know, testing the machine, tweaking the memory, see it, how much data you need for the catalog size that you have in order to actually process requests. And then lastly, for this too many attribute values, if you've ever looked in our Aurora store, the sample catalog that we have, we've taken these large attribute values like color and size, and we split them up into kind of sub-attributes. So we separate them by category. So we have color women's dresses, color men's ties, things like that. And that's going to reduce the amount of attribute data values that are retrieved for displaying products. We also have an APAR for this that improves some of our queries for Feature Pack 5. The APAR is JR44864, and that's also going to help if you have a very large catalog and you have a large number of attribute values. This APAR is going to reduce the amount of data that we're retrieving from the database to display on the storefront. Slide 13. Okay, so now I'm going to pass it over to Dan. Dan's going to walk us through some general troubleshooting tips on how to troubleshoot query issues.
Thanks, Brendan. So something that I get asked a lot with tickets is, why am I getting what I'm getting back from Solr, and can you help me figure out how to change what I'm getting back so that I get my desired results? Sometimes it's my results aren't in the right order, I don't have the product that I want at the top, or I'm not getting the product that I want at all. Sometimes it's I'm getting too many results or not enough. And a lot of these things are something that it's actually very easy to pull out that Solr query. So in this section, I'm just going to give you the very generic form of that, and then Brendan's going to go into a couple of very specific use cases on some query troubleshooting that you can do. Slide 14, please. So like I had said, sometimes you see missing data, you see the data in the wrong order, or you don't have the right information coming back. And a lot of this is as a direct result of the query that you're sending to Solr. So slide 15, please. So when you're going to troubleshoot a Solr query, there's a very simple set of steps that you can follow for any Solr query that you're executing on your server that will allow you to find out what's the query that's being executed, and then you can execute it directly against your Solr server and retrieve the information that Solr is sending to you. So then you can determine, is this something that's a problem with the query that I'm executing? Do I have bad data on my Solr server? Maybe I need to update some database information. And it can give you a start in trying to troubleshoot this information. So the five steps that I'm going to take us through are collect tracing, and I'll show you the trace strings. Find which Solr query is being executed to retrieve your data. Parse that query out for all of the relevant fields. Take out any additional stuff that's going to be used for formatting or filtering. Directly query the Solr server with your isolated query, and then you can take the results of that query and determine if that's the information that you're looking for. Slide 16, please. All right, so the very first thing that you're going to do for every Solr troubleshooting issue is you're going to enable these trace strings. After that, you're going to execute whatever Solr search you're using to retrieve the data. In some cases, this will also be navigating to a category, or this will be selecting a particular facet, so then you can actually see that particular SOLR query being executed inside your tracing. Immediately after you're done the action that you're getting your bad data on, retrieve your tracing just so then you don't have an excessive amount of trace, and then you can turn it off so then if you're collecting tracing from an environment that may be experiencing performance issues as a result of this, it'll be a very short test. Slide 17, please. After you've got your SOLR query tracing, all that I do every time is just search for final SOLR query, and that'll tell you, was my query executed or is this currently a cached query? And it'll pull out all of the SOLR queries that have been executed in that period of tracing. Now, one of those SOLR queries is going to correlate to the query that you are executing on your storefront. Typically, when I'm doing a storefront search, I like to pick out a keyword from the tracing so then I can figure out which one of these final SOLR queries is being executed. But you will find several of these within the tracing. After that, you go and you just pull out the query, and you can see a sample query expression here. And that'll be right after the final SOLR query statement. Slide 18, please. So after you've collected the SOLR query, for some levels of tracing, you will also find your SOLR server. It'll be after a statement like this with the search query helper connecting to, and that star is going to be whatever your SOLR server name is. In some cases with your SOLR query, you'll find that your environment wasn't configured for the SOLR server that you expected. And so this will help you to determine when during that environment migration or during that change scenario, whether or not that change was picked up by Commerce, and it'll point you directly to an issue with that. Slide 19, please. So after you've isolated the SOLR query, sometimes that SOLR query is going to be very long and it's going to be very difficult to read through. So I've just got a couple of very simple steps of how to take out any unnecessary fields that you're looking at in your SOLR query. In some cases for facet queries, if you do want to be getting the facet information, you shouldn't remove that field. But for the most part, if you're saying my products are not in the right order or my products are missing from my SOLR search or anything like that, then you can very easily take those fields out. So here I've got an example of a SOLR query, and this isn't even as bad as they get. Sometimes you can have many, many more fields and make it even more difficult to read through. Slide 20, please. So a couple of simple things that you can do to remove the fields from this. Take out everything starting with &FL, everything starting with &facet, and everything starting with &highlight. &FL is your field filter. What that's going to do is it's going to reduce the number of fields that are returned. A lot of the time when you're getting information directly back from your SOLR server, you won't need to filter out your fields. &facet is only related to facet navigation, and it's only going to change a section at the bottom of your search results, but it's not going to change what actual products are returned for your initial results. And finally, &HL, that's the query formatting. You won't need it because you'll be looking directly at the XML document. You're not doing any post-processing, and that's almost entirely reserved for WebSphere Commerce processing the query after it's come back. So as you can see, this is the exact same query as I had on that slide on the previous slide. It's going to return the exact same information, aside from a couple of things that are unnecessary for our troubleshooting steps. Slide 21, please. So after you've got this information, then you can go and you can put together a query directly against your SOLR server. Here you can see I use one of our local machines, Denso. But whatever your SOLR server host name is, and port number, and whichever index you were querying against, and then you can go and you can just put that query directly in against your SOLR server and execute that. Also ensure that you've got network connectivity to your SOLR server, because if you don't have a network connection to it, you're going to end up getting error 404, so you're going to end up encountering issues there. Slide 22, please. So after this, after you've gone through this set of steps and you've executed your query against your SOLR server, then the next step is, so what's next? In a lot of cases, you can go and you can read through that SOLR query that's being executed, and you can say something like, oh, well, the catalog ID that I'm sending to SOLR, that's my master catalog ID instead of my sales catalog ID, so that's why I'm seeing more products. Or something like, oh, well, I didn't realize it was being executed against the wrong SOLR server, and then you can update your SOLR server information in your database. In some cases, that sales catalog wasn't entitled to the catalog entry. So then you could go and you could read through your preprocessor files and say which catalog entries are being picked up for the sales catalog and how can I adjust my data so then Solr will pick it up like that. And in some cases, you'll also find something like your store ID will be incorrect in your Solr server or in your Solr query, or any other information may be wrong, and it's very easy to read after you've got the query correctly parsed. Slide 23, please. All right, so now I'm going to pass it back over to Brendan. He's going to run us through a few specific use cases for Solr queries.
Thanks, Dan. So the first one here, I have wildcard. Just to talk about the steps that Dan walked through, I use that for every single troubleshooting issue I've ever done for queries, basically finding the Solr query in Commerce and figuring out, comparing that to the data in Solr. I use that for these two issues that I'm going to talk about, for unexpected search results with wildcard, and then the next one is going to be sequencing. So for this one, customers who use wildcards on their searches or, you know, find their customers on their store, they use a lot of wildcard searches, they could run into this. You can actually reproduce this in our out-of-the-box data, however, in a sample catalog. So I have some searches here. Chair, all uppercase. If you search for that, you get 12 products back. Chair, all lowercase, with a star, with a wildcard search, that's 12 products also returned. Chair, all uppercase, again with the star, 0 products found. The other example I have is table, all lowercase, 19 products found. And then table, still all lowercase, just with a wildcard search added to the end, 3 products found. So that might be, you know, a little counterintuitive. You figure wildcard searches, they could only ever increase the search results. But that's actually not what's happening. Slide 24. So when you do a search in the storefront, if you're using one of our out-of-the-box search profiles, we generally search against fields name, short description, keyword, a couple others. Most of the fields that we search against in the storefront, they're going to have a field type of WC text. A field type is, it defines the processing that's going to happen in the data that's stored in the field. So name has field type WC text, and that tells it, you know, what exactly is going to be. But before you store the data in the index, there's going to be some processing to kind of generally increase search hits. And make it more likely that you're actually going to find something when you search in the field. And these fields and field types are all defined in the schema.xml. Slide 25. So here's the field type I was talking about, WC text. And what happens is any data that's going to be stored in a field with this field type defined, WC text, it goes through this list we call them filters and tokenizers. And each tokenizer and filter is responsible for doing, you know, its own processing on the data that's going to be stored in the index. We also do the same thing for data for your search phrase. So if you're searching against the name field, before we actually do the search, we also do some processing on the exact search term that the customer entered. So in the screenshot, I have analyzer type index. I didn't get the fit in here. Below the analyzer type index, there's also analyzer type query. Generally, they're the same. They don't have to be, but for WC text, they're mostly the same. So just to explain what I'm talking about, we can look at a couple examples. Lowercase filter factory, for example. That one's simple. It takes everything that we're going to store in the index and it converts it to lowercase. So chair with an uppercase C becomes chair with the lowercase C. And like I said, searches, not only the data that we're going to store in the index, but the data, you know, the search that we're doing, if we're searching against that field, we're also going to run it through this. So chair, all uppercase, becomes chair, all lowercase. Because what's in the index matches with what you're searching for, they're all lowercase, you get a search hit and you find it. You get a match. Wildcard searches, they're a little different. We don't tokenize them. And that's actually what's happening with both of these issues. So chair all uppercase, that remains chair all uppercase as long as when you have that wildcard search on it. Because we don't store chair all uppercase in the index, there's no match. Slide 26. So it's the same thing for the table example that I had. In that case, it was another filter factory called Snowball Porter Filter Factory that was causing this issue. What Snowball Porter Filter Factory does is it takes the words and it converts them to singular. It's algorithm-based, so it's not perfect, and sometimes you get some weird results. For example, table, that's the singular of the word, but we're still processing it, and whatever the algorithm, you know, whatever it tells it to do, for some reason, it thinks table's the plural, and it's going to convert it to table, T-A-B-L. It drops the E, and it thinks that's the singular word. That's actually fine, though. That's not a problem, as long as what we're searching against, you know, the search that we have also gets similar processing in it. And for the search term that we did, that was the case. So we search for table, it becomes table, and that matches exactly what's in the index. So there's no problem. And again, it's the wildcard search that's screwing things up here. So table with the wildcard, well, that remains table. It doesn't get converted into table. And we don't have any tables actually stored in the index, so there's no search results. Slide 27. So I have a solution here. Before implementing the solution, I'd recommend that you first of all take a look at across a couple of days, basically the searches that customers are performing on your storefront, and see how popular wildcard searches are. Depending on, you know, if you only see a couple of wildcard searches per day, it might not be worth it to implement the solution. But I have the solution here. What you can do is you can it's a three-step solution. First step is you can create a new type. So before we were looking at WC text. Here I've created in the schema.xml simple WC text. And all I've done is I've commented out anything that's going to basically not be used for a wildcard search. So I've commented out lowercase filter factory and snowball porter filter factory. Slide 28. After you do that, you have to assign new fields to the type that you created. So here, basically, I took those fields that we were looking at earlier, name, short description, keyword, and I made different versions of them. I just appended simple to the beginning of them, and then I assigned them to this new field type, simple WC text. You have to do this in the schema.xml as well as the WC data config.xml. And lastly, in the WC search.xml on the commerce machine, you have to specify the search profile that you're using. You have to specify the search in these new fields. So you can see I added simple name, simple short description, etc. Slide 28 or 29. So I wanted to bring up another example real quick. This is a leading wildcard. So a leading wildcard is basically you have, you know, your wildcard character at the beginning of the search. The solar index that we have, it's not optimized for leading wildcard searches. And if you do have, you know, you do find on your store that wildcard searches are popular and that a lot of customers are using leading wildcard searches, you can potentially see performance degradation. we have a couple of solutions. One is this APAR, JR46363, that basically nullifies leading wildcard searches. Use this if you don't think the leading wildcard search contributes much to the actual search. So look at what the customer is searching. See if, you know, the start, the beginning actually draws in all that many more results. If it doesn't, you can just nullify it and not even deal with it. And that's probably the better solution for most of our customers. If you do find that leading wildcard searches are important and that, you know, your customers are needing them, to find results, what you can do instead is you can add in another filter factory called the reversed wildcard filter factory into the field type for the field that you're searching against. According to the SolarWiki, what this thing does is actually kind of weird. It takes the terms that are stored in the index and it gives the reverse of them. So shoe becomes EOHF. It's very strange, but apparently that helps Solar be able to search these a lot quicker, and you're not going to see these performance problems. Again, from the SolarWiki, you only need to add this to the index section. So like how I said that there's an index section and a query section, only put this one in index. That's all that's needed. A word of caution, we think that adding this is going to increase the time that it's going to take to build the index, and it's also potentially going to increase the index size. So if you are going to add in this reversed wildcard filter factory, I would recommend testing to see how long build index takes and make sure that you're comfortable with that and also comfortable with your new index size. Slide 30. Okay, so that was wildcard searches. Now we're going to do the last example I have here, which is sequencing. Sequencing is really popular for a lot of our customers, and all it is basically, you know, setting up the desired order on your storefront for when you're displaying products. So you want product A to display first, product B to display second. And there's a lot of different small variations of what customers are requesting in order to set up their store just so. But sequencing, when I talk about sequencing, I mean the sequence that you define for products in management center. So it's just a field in management center for each product for a particular cat group. Something that you may not realize for sequencing, we don't use a simple solar sort when we're determining sequence order. And we can't do this because the sequence field is multi-valued. So it's very difficult if you have a multi-valued field, you know, which of those values are you actually going to sort by. So anything multi-valued, you can't sort, and that includes sequencing. Sequencing is multi-valued because for sales catalogs, you can have products in multiple categories, and each of those categories, a product can have a unique sequence number. So you can see here for cat entry 10096, I have like five different sequence values. And actually, they're just all just one or zero, but you know, these could potentially all be different. Now, the way you read this is catalog ID is the first number before the underscore. The middle number is catalog group ID, and then lastly is the sequence value. So what we do instead of just a simple sort parameter, we use a function, a solar function that we created, and we added some code into the solar year. This function is called getSequenceByCatalogInCategory, and it uses a solar method called boosting. Boosting gives you back relevancy scores instead of, you know, a very simple sort order. Slide 31. Yeah, so like I said, boosting calculates relevancy score. So what it does is for each product or for each hit returned, it's going to have a score assigned to it. And basically, the higher your score, the larger your score, the higher up you're going to be in the search results. So the highest score gets displayed first. The thing is, for relevancy score, if you're not doing sort and you're using boosting, other factors can affect the sequence number. For example, if you're doing a search for a specific term frequency, the amount of times that term shows up in a specific solar document, that will affect relevancy score as well. And there's other things that could potentially affect relevancy score. For troubleshooting relevancy score, it's exactly the same as Dan mentioned for gathering trace, the foundation trace, and then basically searching for the final solar query. Slide 32? Yeah. So, like I said, find the final solar query. What you're looking for specifically for sequencing issues is check to see if that function I mentioned is passed into the final solar query expression. So you can see here this final solar query expression, it does indeed have get sequence by catalog and category. And then in it we pass in those two parameters. It says sequence, and then I believe it's the catalog ID and then the category ID. So look for the final solar query and check to make sure that it has the right catalog ID and the right category ID. And then this is likely going to be the search that that you're trying to troubleshoot. Once you find and you validate that this is the search, you find the response to the query, which is just a couple of lines down. And then at the very end of the response, you're going to find something called an explain. Slide 33. So this explain will print out the relevancy score for each and every product, and it's going to explain, you know, the why the products came back in the sequence that they came back. So let's look at this for a little bit. You can see here it says explain equals, and then it prints out the product ID, and then it says equals, and then it prints out the relevancy score. So that's the final score for this product. And for this product, it gets 0.706. And then what it does is it breaks down how it got that number. And what you have to do is you kind of have to match up, I guess, the tabbing or the spacing in the trace in order to figure out, you know, how these numbers come to be. So I've put a color-coded a couple of these numbers. For example, sum of, it's a sum of the number 0.707 and this really small number, actually, negative 707 times e to the negative 4. So it ends up being a really small number. And then what it does is it explains exactly how it got that really small number. So that's what I have in blue here. That number is a product of, and then it's a product of three different values. So it's a product of a constant. The second number, that 1.0 equals boost, that's actually the sequence value, and then there's the query norm. So it multiplies them all together, and that's how it comes up with this number. Slide 34. So what you'll see when you do have sequencing issues is that there's going to be other values in this explain aside from the function that's returning the sequence value or the overall sequence value. There's going to be other values that are affecting the relevancy score. So I have an example here, product A and product B. If we only had the numbers in red for these products, then product B should actually be returned first. See, it's at negative 2051. Because it's a negative number, it's actually larger than product A, which is at negative 2052. So if we only had the numbers in red, then product B would display first. But what's happening is we're getting these additional numbers. We're getting these additional numbers in blue that are affecting the overall relevancy score that are throwing it off and making product A display first. Slide 35. So for the values in blue, you can see parent cat group ID facet. It's affecting the relevancy score. And looking at the final solar query, we could see that this parent cat group ID facet for this customer scenario, it was being searched in the Q parameter. The Q parameter directly affects relevancy. So whenever you have anything in Q, if there's a match on it, it's going to increase your relevancy score. Slide 36. So there's a couple of different solutions for this. For this particular scenario, the solution was to not use the Q parameter for parent cat group ID facet. It's perfectly fine to use a different parameter, FQ, which is filter query. So basically, FQ filters out anything that doesn't adhere to, you know, you could say parent cat group ID facet and then give it a cat group ID, and it's going to filter everything else out. The good thing about FQ is that it doesn't affect relevancy score. And you can use the FQ parameter by, in getDataConfig.xml, passing in this parameter I have here, wcf.search.internal.filterquery. If you then define your FQ parameter, that's how you set that up. Second solution, this is more of a generic solution. Recommend caution doing the solution, but you can tweak, there's a constant in the search function. I didn't really mention the constant, but if we look at that search function again, before the get sequence by catalog and category, there's a number given. And that's a constant, and that's actually the constant that was multiplied that made it a really small number. So you can see it's negative 001. So what you can do is increase that number. And that's going to increase the relevancy score for the sequence value, and then that's going to make them more important than any other relevancy score for the products and make it more likely that you're going to get the sequence values returned in the order. If you are going to tweak this value, I recommend careful testing after. Making it too large can really change things unexpectedly. So make small incremental changes. Like maybe change it from 001 to 005 or something. You can change this function in the wc-component.xml. Slide 37. So last thing I wanted to mention was something that seems to be really popular for a lot of our customers, and that's deep category sequencing. Sequencing out of the box, it only works at the leaf category level. So say you have category A, and then in it you have a bunch of products defined. If you're viewing category A, sequencing shows up fine. However, if you view a parent category, category B, and you're still getting those products back, they're not going to be in the sequence, the sequences defined for category A. And a lot of our customers were wanting this functionality to get the sequence value back all across the hierarchy. So what we did was we created an APART JR43778 that adds deep category sequencing and does this by adding a new field and a new formula. But if deep category sequencing is something you're interested in, just you can download it from our Six Central thing. Slide 38. So that's everything we wanted to cover today. We wanted to give you some basic troubleshooting tips for runtime issues, high CPU, out of memory, and then query issues, which we see a lot of nowadays. On this page, you can see some links for additional product resources. I know one of these links has links to a lot of our upcoming WSDs. I know we have a lot planned for Web3 Commerce in the coming months. I have one in July. It's going to be covering common customizations for Solr Search, which, again, we see a lot of. Dan, he's going to be doing one in August covering data load. And then we have a ton more. So I recommend following these links and seeing any upcoming stuff that we have planned. At this point, I'm going to pass it back to Valerie.
Thank you. Thank you, Brendan and Dan, for a great presentation. Lots of valuable troubleshooting information. Remember to connect with us. You can be notified about upcoming webcasts related to the product and topics discussed today by subscribing to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange mailing list. Simply send an email to wsehelp@us.ibm.com with subject WSTE subscribe. Also, if there is a topic you would like to see scheduled, or if you have any comments that would help us improve future webcasts, please let us know at that same email address. We welcome any ideas you may have. Moving on to the question and answer session, keep in mind today's session is being recorded and will be posted on the Support Technical Exchange website. When asking questions, do not include any confidential information, your name or your company name, that you do not want to be available on IBM.com or social media sites such as YouTube. If you have any questions, please, we have one question. You may ask your question now.
Yeah, hi. I have a question that I think it's related to this topic. Maybe you can clarify for me if it is or not. There's this concept of SEO, search engine optimization, and I'm not exactly quite sure how it relates to Solr, or are they mutually exclusive? Because I get the impression that they may be.
They're mostly mutually exclusive. We have a little bit of SEO data in one of our indexes, the catalog group index, but for the most part, that's mostly data retrieved from the database.
Okay, so with SEO, you know, how is the search being done if it's not Solr?
So SEO, that's a search engine optimization, and it's done, I guess, to make better searches for Google and things like that.
Yeah, primarily SEO is... it's a search engine optimizer, but it's for an external search engine. So in something like Google Search or Microsoft Search or Apple Search or whatever, these search engines will crawl to your site, and having search engine optimized URLs will help to improve your search relevancy, and it'll allow their crawlers to index your site more efficiently, and so you'll get higher relevancy scores when somebody is searching for your site via one of these search engines.
And all it does is like simplify the URL. So before, if you don't have SEO, what you're going to see when you hit a page is you're going to see, you know, something like, I don't know, product display, and then it's going to have a question mark, and that indicates like the beginning of the parameters that you're adding for the display. And then you're going to see a bunch of different parameters, and that, I guess, can look kind of ugly. So what we do with SEO is we basically convert all of those parameters into something nice and simple. So, you know, for displaying a particular product, maybe you'd see product display slash and then the product name, and that's it, instead of all these different parameters that you would otherwise see in the URL.
Okay, but is the SEO also part of the feature pack?
Yeah, that got added.
SEO was originally introduced, I believe, in It was originally introduced in version 6, I believe, and then in feature pack 3, we upgraded to a newer version of SEO URLs that allow you a lot more customization potential, and they just work a lot more efficiently than the previous iteration.
If you want to enable it, I think, there's basically just like some .shcrypt you have
there,
to run.
There are a couple of steps on the Info Center for how to enable SEOs. You just generate a set of SEO tokens and enable the patterns files for your site. And after that, it basically runs itself.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much for that question. Are there any additional questions? Press 1 and 0 to queue a question or enter your question in the chat session. There was a question asked earlier about quantifying too many facets from slide 10, and we see that Brendan has responded to that question.
Looks like there's one from Madhu here. Madhu's asking about, when we try to alter max Boolean clauses param in solarconfig.xml, why does it always take from default solarconfig.xml instead of catalog entry catalog group specific solarconfig.xml? I didn't think it did. That's interesting. I wonder how you set up your search server if it's actually reading from the default solarconfig.xml, because it should be reading from for the solarconfig.xml for a specific index. It shouldn't be touching the default solarconfig.xml. So if you're actually finding that, that's odd to me. I'd have to see a trace from a server startup and see where it's reading the solarconfig.xml for that specific index. What you might have done, I'm not sure, when you change the solarconfig.xml, you need to restart the solar server in order for that to be reloaded. Or I think there's a parameter or like a URL you can pass in to reload the config files. Either or would work. So maybe there was something where you changed that solarconfig.xml and it didn't look to be working, and then maybe you changed the default one and then did a restart or something. I'm not really sure. I need trace to see why.
There's another question in the chat from Amit.
From Amit. I don't have it. He okay, sent
with-
a...
With feature pack 5, we can add any attribute to be searchable. Is there any limitation or recommended number for enabling attribute to be searchable?
So there's no hard set limitation for adding attributes. For that, I would recommend basically testing if you are planning on adding a large number of attributes and you have a large catalog, need to test your queries against the Solar server to see if you're getting back an acceptable response time. Generally, we find that a lot of customers, they set a large number of attributes, and then they find that they've kind of cluttered the page a little too much, and that they want to remove some of these attributes. So that was another reason that we added this category-specific attribute queries. And again, for that, if you're doing a lot of category searches, you can generally have a larger number of attributes. So there's no hard set value, and basically it all boils down to testing for your particular instance, for your particular catalog. It varies on stuff like, number one, I guess, the number of attributes you have, but also the number of attribute values that you have per attribute, and then the number of products that you have in your overall index. So there's a lot of variations it's hard to come up with like a specific limitation. It's going to be different for every customer.
Thank you, Brendan. We have another question from Rich. Can you make a recommendation on attribute values that are unique per product, like alternate part numbers, UPC, competitor part numbers, and avoiding OOM with too many attribute values?
I think that's kind of the same
question. That's something that I could speak to a little bit. If you've got attribute values that are going to be product specific, instead of using the allowed values attributes, you can use assigned values attributes. And what that's going to do is it's going to allow you to have a unique attribute value per product, and then do not mark that particular attribute as facetable, and that should help you to avoid any out of memory scenarios that may come up for your Solar server.
Yeah, I think from these questions, I might have scared a couple people. I've only seen out-of-memories on Solr servers for attributes for a couple of customers, and these are for, like, really large catalogs with, like, millions and millions of products and a very large number of attribute values. So, I mean, all it takes is do some testing on your site before, you know, as you enable and add more attributes and make them facetable, do some testing and make sure that you're getting back, you know, acceptable response times from the Solr server.
Okay. How do you use FQ parameter instead of Q parameter?
Okay. for that, I mentioned that quickly in the slide. I didn't have detailed instructions. What I'm planning to do for this is I have a blog. I call it the Solr Cookbook for customizations. I plan on adding this in the next couple of days of how exactly you add to the FQ parameter, because a lot of our customers, they're doing, they already know how to add something to the Q parameter through the getDataConfig.xml, and it's pretty much the same steps for adding to the FQ parameter. It's just adding to a different parameter, so it's like wcf.search.internalFilterQuery. So that's done by basically you need to change your getData tag on the storefront to add in, you know, a custom value depending on what category ID you're in. Generally, that's what people use FQ for, but there's other stuff. And then linking that parameter in your getData tag to the getDataConfig.xml and adding in this wcf.search.internalFilterQuery. If you look on the DeveloperWorks site and you search for Search Cookbook, I think, you'll probably find me. And in the next couple of days, I plan on uploading specific instructions on how to do that.
Okay, we have another question here. We are thinking of using Solr as a data storage to take the load off the database. Specifically, we would like product attributes on product page to come from Solr instead of the database. While most of them will not be searchable, what do you think about this? Did you see any WebSphere Commerce server users doing this? Do you see any complications?
For this, I haven't seen anyone do this. It's going to involve probably, I don't know the queries that you're going to make, but I think you might have to come up with either a bunch of custom fields, or even maybe potentially a custom index. We only store really specific data for attributes in the index. We just store the actual attribute value. There's other values for attributes that, in our queries, we retrieve from the database. So we get, you know, something very specific to attributes from a query from Solr, and then we go against the database and retrieve more data. So you're looking at probably adding a lot more fields, or and if you do add a lot more fields, you're going to have to introduce grouping as well into your Solr index if you're just going to use a cat entry index. So it might be easier just to create a custom index. Difficulties? I don't really know. Like I said, I haven't really seen anyone do this before. It sounds interesting. I don't know. Let me know if you do go through this. I'd be interested.
Actually, also, just from a quick another different perspective on it, it would also likely significantly increase the size of your Solr index, especially if you're using an allowed values attribute model. For the allowed values, you're able to reuse that same attribute over and over again, but if you actually index what is in those attributes, you would have to index that for every product that allowed value is assigned to, and so you'd likely really significantly increase the storage space that would be used by your data.
It depends how you set up the index or the fields, but yeah, that's something you have to watch out for. You might not have to add it, but it would definitely take some careful planning and testing along the way.
We thank you for all your questions, and again, we thank you for presenting, Brandon and Dan, and doing such a wonderful job. Since there are no more questions at this time, we will conclude this webcast. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation, and we hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange website. Thank you. This concludes the webcast. You may disconnect now.